It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast on a Monday. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, Ashley Bastock. We all survived draft weekend. Exhausted still, I'm sure. I've got to admit, I feel bad saying it, but this draft did wear me out for some reason. And this was a pretty easy draft. There was no first round pick. It wasn't real complicated. There weren't a bunch of trade downs. Even the two seventh round picks weren't all that tough to deal with. So our buddy Jay will be happy to hear that we survived that. But I still got to say, Mary Kay, this draft, even though we kind of still got to sit out Thursday, still kind of knocked me out. I just sort of stared at the ceiling yesterday. I watched like the Guardians game. I couldn't get myself motivated. I know you actually worked yesterday and wrote something, but this one still wore me out for some reason.
I think the draft is always taxing and grueling to cover. Everybody's tired. Everybody in the building in Berea is tired. All the reporters that cover it are tired. It's just it's a long grind to get to that point. And I mean, I remember back in the day, yes, the Browns would have sometimes 14 picks, 12 picks, 10 picks. But now we also, in addition to all the writing that we do, we do so much other stuff. So I think that contributes to it. We didn't always have to do a daily, but I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining at all, but I do understand why you would have to stare at the ceiling yesterday. It takes a lot out of you.
Well, yeah. And in the internet age, I'm stealing this line from somebody else, but in the internet age, you can kind of just write forever, right? There's no actual deadline. There's no cap on, there's no word counts, no inch counts. Like you can just write forever nonstop if you want to. I mean, Ashley, I was talking to Chris Easterling about this before I left on Saturday. Like I don't think you've really gotten to experience a real draft where there's a first round pick.
No,
and you're there late on Thursday and showing up for a press conference Friday and you're there late again. Like you've never even gotten to experience the real thing yet.
No, I like the closest I came would have been the year of the Deshaun Watson trade, but it wasn't obviously the night of the draft because they didn't have a first round pick, but it was the lead up to the draft. Like I do feel like I got a taste of what a combine is like when you have a first round pick, because we talked to a bunch of those receivers that year. We really zoned in on that. We thought they were going to take a receiver with the number 13 overall pick in 2022 when they still had it. So that's the only, I think, true taste of what it is like to cover a draft in a quote unquote normal year that I've gotten. And I'm with you, Dan. I was sitting there on Saturday night at like 11 when I got home, and all day Sunday just had no motivation to really do anything. I wrote our newsletter, and I swear it wasn't that complicated. It took me like an hour and a half to write to be able to put words together. And I'm with you. I feel guilty. I don't know why it took so much out of me, but I was kind of proactively now dreading covering this next year when they do have that first round pick, as Andrew Berry likes to joke. For now. They have it for now. So we'll see if he, makes that punchline actual fact or if I get my first taste of it next year.
I'm with Andrew on that. I still am very much in the for now camp with that first round pick. Who knows how he could end up using that thing. So let's do this. There's always moments I always like to say in the NFL calendar over the NFL season where they have to show us a little something. They can't be secretive and quiet. Like they have to do something. And the draft is one of those things. It's a chance to kind of learn a little bit how they feel about certain things, how they feel about their roster, kind of what they have compared to what we think. So we're going to kind of figure out what we learned this past weekend about the Browns roster and maybe what they think of it versus what we think of it. So Mary Kay, why don't you go first here? What was something you learned this week about the Browns?
Well, I'm going to tackle the defensive tackles because that's obviously what they ended up with their first pick in this draft, number 54. And you look at that room now and you kind of have to wonder, is there going to be an odd man out? They went into this draft pretty well stocked, at least from a numbers position at the defensive tackle spot. In fact, they did not believe or feel that they were going to come out of this draft with a defensive tackle. It was deemed an unlikely proposition. I've been digging around and doing some reporting. I have a story up on this today with an inside look at the draft sort of pick by pick. And Michael Hall was their last of three defensive tackles that they considered. All three of them had the rush gene, the rush trait. The first one was Byron Murphy, and he went 18 to the Seahawks. The second one was Johnny Newton. He went 36 to the, I have to look that up again, but Johnny Newton went earlier than they thought he was going to go. He went to the Commanders at 36. That left Michael Hall as the remaining defensive tackle that had this rush ability. They did not really consider Chris Jenkins or Mason Smith, even though those two were widely, widely mocked to the Browns. I guess, I mean, Michael Hall was too, apparently, but those two other guys were widely mocked to the Browns. And as it turns out, they really weren't on the list at defensive tackle. They set the bar very, very high at defensive tackle. And the bar was, can you get to the quarterback? Can you do that? If you can do that, you have a place on our team. So they felt there was probably about a 50-50 proposition that Mike Hall would be there for them. So they didn't really count on it. But what happened is a lot of guys that they really liked started to fly off the board before their pick came. And some of those guys included wide receiver Ladd McConkey of Georgia. He went at number 34. Johnny Newton, as I mentioned, went number 36. And then center guard Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon went 44 to the Raiders. These were some of the guys that they were contemplating at 54. When it got to that point, instead of maybe going for a prospect that had a little bit more of a well-rounded profile, they went for the trait. They grabbed the hard-to-obtain trait more so than the grade of the player himself. So they did something a little different. They went off the reservation a little bit and really just grabbed a trait. They grabbed a trait, and they believe that Michael Hall will be able to rush the passer to a great extent from the interior at this level. So they're banking on that aspect of it. But when I look at the roster, I see that it's now a little bit crowded at the three technique. So you've got Shelby Harris, who can play three technique and nose. You've got newly acquired Quinton Jefferson, who is a three technique and a good one, and one who can rush the passer. And then you've got Maurice Hurst, who is a three technique. And you've got Siaki Ika, who is a nose. So with Michael Hall being a three, it's a little crowded there right now. It's a little bit crowded. So there could end up being an odd man out when all is said and done, unless one of those guys that is primarily a three technique is able to make himself valuable, very valuable in another way. It's going to be difficult for all these three techniques now to make the roster. So we'll have to see how this goes. As I mentioned, they're Quinton Jefferson, they're Maurice Hurst, and it includes Shelby to a certain extent. So little shakeup in the room, and you know they actually have a little bit of a surplus there. In terms of Siaki, though, he's not going to lose playing time to Michael Hall because Siaki is a nose. So, you know, the drafting of Michael Hall did not inform Siaki Ika's future. He's got to make it on his own merit, and he's got to be really good to get some playing time. But this doesn't change much of anything for him.
So just kind of looking at the tackle room in general, just as a whole, and I'm kind of working through a super early 53-man roster, right, before we've had any undrafted free agents make a splash or anything like that. So you take it all with a grain of salt. But this is a suddenly crowded room because if we're just looking at defensive tackles and not separating, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson is going to make it. Quentin Jefferson's going to make it. And Mike Hall is going to make it. So now it comes down to who else gets in there. How many do they keep? You know, obviously they value versatility. So how many edge rushers do they have? And Ashley, I think it gets a little dicey for, you know, Mary Kay said Siaki's got to make it on his own merit. I think it's going to be a little bit of a long road for him. Well, that'll be a nice test for Andrew Berry with a former draft pick if he doesn't kind of earn his way on. I think if you look at the two veterans they brought back, Harris and Hurst, they gave Harris 2 years. Hurst is on a 1 year deal. So I don't know. I think there's some guys that maybe fans really like that are going to be fighting an uphill battle to make this roster. And I'll admit, sometimes I kind of forget about Quentin Jefferson, but I think that was a really nice signing. And I think he fits exactly what Jim Schwartz wants. So I think, you know, I think he's one of the locks in this room along with Dalvin Tomlinson and Mike Hall. So that only leaves one, maybe two more spots.
Yeah, I do think it is ultimately going to come down to these guys they want to keep. And I think Catherine Raich brought it up in the press conferences they did on Friday night. But I do think it's important to remember with this D-line, Jim Schwartz likes to rotate guys. We know that was like about 8 or 9 guys a game. Obviously, that includes your ends as well. But it is interesting. I mean, I just feel like we've talked a lot about the idea of this defense running it back and the negatives to that, why it might make us nervous, why it might make me nervous individually. And I don't hate that you're bringing in some new guys like Michael Hall and obviously Quentin Jefferson and trying to mix things up. And yeah, like you said, Mo Hurst, that's a guy who's coming off of a torn pec, for example, 1 year deal they brought him back on. So I'm really curious to see what happens throughout camp, especially, and what kind of competition there is there at that position. But I'm all for bringing in new names and trying it, even if it makes the room crowded, just because I think, again, you needed sack help last year from anywhere outside of Myles Garrett. And they just couldn't find that consistently, I think, for different reasons. I don't think it means they totally have to rebuild their D-line. You know, Obo Okoronkwo got hurt. Za'Darius Smith took a while to get going. Maybe those guys will be able to get closer to that double digit or in those double digit sack ranges that we were kind of all anticipating they might be able to land in last year. I think in this D-line, we've said it time and time again, you need to have 3 players pushing for double-digit sacks. It's kind of the whole point of the system. It makes it harder for offenses to figure out to counteract you. So throw some spaghetti at a wall and see what sticks, so to speak, in your off-season roster building process.
And Mary Kay, what was it we heard over and over again with these picks and these defensive tackles? And when we'd ask about the money guys are getting and the value, you know, that run on tackles, get after the quarterback. Like every single person that stood up there or sat up there and talked to us, from Catherine and Glenn to Andrew, anybody we talked to, it was the value of interior pass rush.
Yes. And that is something that Quentin Jefferson brings to the table automatically. He's got that. I think he had 6 sacks last season. So he's someone that brings that natural inherent rush ability. And that's exactly what they were looking for in Michael Hall, and somebody that they can have doing that for them at a nice price on a rookie contract over the next 4-5 years or so, depending on how that all shakes out. So I think that is exactly what they were looking for. And they have to hope that it works out like that. Now, when you're talking about sacks, he did not have the sack production. He had 4.5. He started for 2 years at Ohio State. His first year as a starter, he had 4.5 sacks. His last year in 2023, he only had 1.5. But as we have said numerous times, the sacks don't really tell the story with him. It's the pass rush win rate that sort of pushed him over the top and showed the Browns that he can do exactly what they need him to do at this level. And that's get off the ball very quickly and wreak some havoc in that backfield. So that's what they're expecting. And that's what he's raring to do. But it does present a few challenges in the room. They might not be able to keep every single one of these guys.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Okay, Ashley, what did you take away from this draft as far as the roster?
We've talked about this before, but I think it just kind of confirmed that the Browns like their pass catching core, I think, a lot more than a lot of fans do, and maybe even some of us in the media, the way we analyze it and what we think there's room for. But I think we all kind of felt this way about especially the receiver room that they have. They did take one receiver in this draft on the third day, of course, Jamari Thrash, but that wasn't the position they were chasing in the second round. I think for a very long time, fans, analysts, you know, we saw them mock D tackles to the Browns, a few linebackers, but receiver was also a very popular position. I think that stopped a little bit once they traded for Jerry Jeudy. But I know even when we talked about the Jerry Jeudy trade in the immediate aftermath, it's like, okay, those three spots, those top three spots at receiver are set now. So I'm not surprised that this is how they handled it. I'm not surprised they went out and got somebody else just to try at the very least. And they've taken a receiver, at least one receiver in every Andrew Berry draft now. But I do think it speaks to how confident they are in that room right now. And it might not be what analysts or fans necessarily think about that room looking from the outside in. So I do think it's really interesting how that room has been built. And obviously, trades have become a huge part of it. And for me, it's like, I think so much of that is they haven't had a first round pick to really chase some of these prime receivers in the last 3 years. So I personally was kind of on the side of, I hope they don't take another receiver that falls into the second or third round like they have in years past, because it hasn't really worked out. It's not like David Bell has come out and become a star. Cedric Tillman, you know, still has a ceiling, obviously, but wasn't a star in his first year. I think those guys are harder to come by when you don't have a first round pick.
This is one of the things I was thinking about too, Mary Kay. And I think it was interesting that the Browns, in hindsight, what they did with that third round pick, I think was interesting, because obviously as it all played out, Andrew stayed exactly where he was all weekend and just picked players. He wasn't able to work any trades out. He wasn't able to move up or down. So he ended up just kind of picking what he wanted there. And the reason I bring that up is with the Zach Zinter pick. I think that's a little higher than maybe some people thought he was going to go, but the Browns didn't have the luxury of waiting to take him in the fourth round. If they wanted him, they had to prioritize him and take him with that third round pick, because they didn't pick again until, what was it, like 156.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably wasn't going to be there. So I just thought it was interesting that they ultimately prioritized, and we don't know where they had him graded or where he was on their board necessarily, but I think it was interesting that they did prioritize bringing in a guy who he could play his rookie year, but somebody's going to have to get hurt for him to play, instead of trying to find a guy who you kind of can pencil in as he's going to help this team immediately, which I think also tells you that they didn't necessarily prioritize receiver at that point. Maybe some of the guys they would have prioritized, like you mentioned, were gone when they went on the clock. But once those guys were gone, it wasn't some huge, hey, we've got to address this. They waited all the way until Jamari Thrash to address it. So I do think it told us a little bit, and we've been saying it on the pod, that they seem to think pretty highly of this receiver room.
Well, here's the thing. Under Ken Dorsey, they're looking for a receiver that has a specific skill set, a specific trait, because he's going to bring something to the table and emphasize something called choice routes. And I wrote about this today. It's basically what Cole Beasley did for the Buffalo Bills and what Shakir Khalil does for the Buffalo Bills. It's the Wes Welker, Julian Edelman type of vibe that you got from New England. And why are we saying Ken Dorsey does this? Because he learned it from Brian Daboll, who learned it in New England. So Brian brought this to Buffalo when he was the offensive coordinator, and Ken Dorsey worked with him there. And they did a lot of that. Well, not only do you have Ken Dorsey coaching that up and emphasizing that, but you also have Chad O'Shea, who was in New England with those guys. So that's going to be something that is going to be high on the point of emphasis list this year. And they really did like Ladd McConkey. And Ladd McConkey was a receiver in this draft that I'm sure a lot of people thought could kind of go in a wide range, depending on what you were looking for. The Browns really liked him a lot. He went at 34, so to think they could have gotten him at 54, you never know. I mean, you just never know. But they liked him enough that I have to believe, and I actually truly do believe and know, that if he were there at 54, he would have been under strong consideration, to be their number 54 pick. He wasn't the only one. As I mentioned before, Johnny Newton also had those traits that they were looking for in a defensive tackle. And then you had Jackson Powers Johnson, who's the center guard. And they really are looking for a succession plan for Joel Bitonio. They have no idea when Joel could just say, okay, I'm done. I'm good to go. I want to walk away while I'm still healthy. So, you know, that I think that had a lot to do with it. It's not that they did not have a receiver high on their list, because they did. And actually they had a couple of them. Jermaine Burton was another one out of Alabama who went to the Bengals at number 80. So what happened when they got to 85, when they started to get towards 85, the same thing happened to them that happened when they started to get towards 54. All of a sudden there was a run on their favorite guys, and they just tick, 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 looked up, and there went a number of their guys there. Cooper Beebe was one. Kieran, the guard from Kansas State, he went at 73. Kieran, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, offensive tackle from Yale, Amagedeji, I don't know if I'm saying that right or not. So they were even willing to go offensive tackle, even though we think they have a surplus at offensive tackle. And then there was Delmar Glaze, a guard, out of Maryland, that went to the Raiders at 77. And again, Jermaine Burton went 80 out of Alabama to the Bengals. So it's not like they weren't thinking receiver. They were thinking receiver. But once again, the receiver had to have a certain skill set. So they were getting very specific to the coaches and to the schemes that they're running. And that's the whole key. That's why one man's trash can be another man's treasure. Because if you're running choice routes, you have to find a choice route guy. Now, Ladd McConkey would have been the perfect choice route guy. But Dan called him Jamari Smith.
I called him Jamari Smith on Saturday.
Today I'm calling him James. Let's just call him James Smith. Should we do that?
There we go.
So Jamari is not a Ladd McConkey. But Jamari, who went at number 156, has the traits that they're looking for. So he has a chance to, make the team because he has these traits. So if all goes as planned, he can make the team as a sort of role-playing reserve backup choice route guy. And you wonder what choice route means, right? I mean, I think you can probably figure it out. But choice route basically means that you make a choice basically depending upon how the defender is playing you. So I don't know how this is going to work out, because I think in my mind, that's going to take a lot of thinking on everybody's part. And what if the choice that you make isn't what Deshaun thinks you're going to do? So I think it's something to me that's going to take a little time to get it worked out. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be perfectly natural to everyone. But that is something that, that is a big deal for this year, and something that Jamari brings to the table for them. And the upside, the way, 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 way up there, high up there comp for him would be if you like knocked it out of the park with him, he would be a Diontae Johnson. Now that's an extremely, extremely high bar for Jamari, way high of a bar. The minimum is get in there sometimes and contribute. You can play inside, you can play outside, you can run choice routes, you can do something for us.
Yeah, I mean, choice routes, it's sort of like a basketball concept, right?
Right.
Like you have stuff you run, but it all sort of works off of what you're seeing and what you're supposed to do in different, you know, it's flexible in a sense. Okay, so mine, I'll just do mine. I am just going to do a big general roster thing. And this is so stupid because it's April 29th and I'm sitting here, I'm staring at this 53-man roster that I'm going to put up. And I'm like stressing out about, oh my God, I didn't get this guy on or that guy on. It's April 29th. What am I doing? The Browns probably don't even have a 53-man roster anywhere in their building right now. It's all just for fun. But this roster, it really is in good shape. And I mean, just to give you guys an example, I'm looking at guards right now, and I realize that I didn't put Michael Dunn on here. And now Michael Dunn didn't make it last year. It was more of a procedural thing, of course, but he didn't make the initial 53. I only have two quarterbacks. I probably have one more running back than I should, but right now it's hard to just have Nick Chubb and two other running backs because we don't know when Nick Chubb is going to be back. So, but the bigger point here is, when I initially kind of was throwing names on there, I got to 45, 46 really quickly. And there's two draft picks that I don't have on here that might have to make, like Juwan Briggs might have to go on the practice squad. You know, that's a seventh round pick. So this roster is, again, and we kind of go through this every year, it's pretty set. And I just thinking ahead, you know, Ashley, we're going to go to rookie minicamp in 2 weeks, and we're going to see a bunch of undrafted guys and guys that are going to be fighting for roster spots. I don't think there's a lot there. Now, injuries are going to happen. There might be a veteran they brought in who maybe doesn't live up to it. You know, I don't think Devin Bush got guaranteed a lot of money, so maybe he just doesn't look like what they expected him to look like. But, you know, right now, this roster is in a really good spot. And I'm just curious how some of these bottom of the roster spots go. I don't know if there's going to be a bunch of undrafted guys and guys that kind of come in off the radar and make this roster.
I think it would take a lot. And I mean, even this weekend, I think it was two times at least that Andrew Berry reminded us that, hey, we traded for Za'Darius Smith on a Friday in May last year. We brought in Shelby Harris during training camp, right? They make moves late. It's not like it's totally done, and they're definitely not adding anything else. I mean, they could, for all we know, something that no one is seeing yet could happen. Mm-hmm. But even without that, I think you're right, Dan. I think this team over the last handful of years has built themselves up to be in a pretty good spot. They at least feel like they're in a pretty good spot. But I mean, I think that's kind of objective. The top of their depth chart, if we want to, you know, go through it position by position, is pretty much settled. I think we knew that coming into this weekend, that there wasn't going to be anyone they took in the second round that was going to need to come in and be a starter immediately. Now, that's not to say Michael Hall won't play. I think he has a very good chance to play from what we know about him and what they like about him. But the way Jim Schwartz rotates guys on their line, you don't even have to over-rely on him if he's going to get playing time immediately. So I think that's just kind of where they are after the last, you know, really 3 to 4 years of building up this team and the big moves they've made. And that's why we talk about this roster is built to win now. And that just kind of shows, okay, they've put in most of this work already.
And Mary Kay, just as you're going through it too, you know, some of these guys pop up. It's like a Tony Brown, you know, Justin Hardy. You don't necessarily look at those guys as, okay, that guy's going to play a bunch of snaps at corner. Again, they might with injury. You know, we saw Mike Ford get on the field, but those guys were signed with a purpose. It wasn't, they didn't just throw them in there. Those guys were signed to come in and help on special teams. There's no guarantee there necessarily, but you've got to account for stuff like that too. You know, they drafted a linebacker this weekend, but you know, I'm sure a guy like Mahmoud Diabate still has value to this team because of his ability to play on special teams. So it just, this roster right now is in a really good place. And I think that's part of why this draft this weekend just didn't have a ton of sizzle and didn't have it. You know, obviously it was the lack of a first round pick too, but there just wasn't a ton of sizzle on this roster, because when you really look at it, you're kind of struggling to find the ways that a lot of these guys get on the field barring injury right away.
Yeah, I think there were a couple of things that contributed to that. The fact that it didn't feel like it had the sizzle, not having the first and not having the fourth, I think that had a lot to do with that. But then also the fact that some of the players that they would have drafted were gone. Some that might have been a little bit what you would call more of a sexier pick were gone. You know, when you talk about receivers, that has a little bit more oomph to it than when you talk about a backup guard that might be the heir apparent to Joel Bitonio. You know, when you pick a receiver even in the third round, there's all kinds of expectations and thoughts that player is really going to turn into something for you. Or even if they would have taken a tight end there. So I think that had to do with it, a lot to do with it. You had your first pick was a player at a position where you truly didn't really need to add another body there. If you got one, fine, but you did not need to add another body there. Your second pick was a player who, if everyone stays healthy, might not see the field at all this year, can be a 10-year starting guard for you and really is designed to be the heir apparent to Joel Bitonio, but might not have a whole bunch to do this year unless he plays on special teams and whatnot. He will be learning the job this year from those interior linemen and maybe taking some backup center snaps too. So that's interesting, but it's not a sexy pick, right? It's just not that. And then as you continue on, you know, by the time you get to the sixth and seventh round, it's just like, okay, let's see what somebody has here that they can do. Somebody has some kind of a distinguishing characteristic or trait that we think that they can come in here and do something for us. And with Watson, it might just mostly right now be his ability to excel on kickoff return coverage under the new rules. So it's that sort of thing. And then with Miles Harden, the cornerback, I mean, Andrew loves cornerbacks. It's really, really hard for him to pass up on cornerbacks. So they'll always try to add to that pile when they can. And Briggs is another movement guy. He's another guy that can shake things up there from the interior. And again, they were looking for very, very specific things in some of these guys. But I do think it's going to be hard for there are going to be areas. We've talked about receiver. What happens, Dan? You're making your roster right now. Tell the people what you did and who you lopped off of there.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically I kept, and mind you, this is with keeping only two quarterbacks, which again, that's not abnormal either. They did that last year on, this is just the initial 53. So, you know, you've got to have Amari, Judy, Elijah Moore on there. I think Cedric Tillman has to be on there. So that leaves maybe two spots. Maybe you could fit a third on there, but I have Jamari Thrash and Michael Woods, which means poor David Bell, a third round pick from a few years ago, he wouldn't make the 53. Now he could go on the practice squad, I'm sure, but you know, there is a tough decision that's going to have to be made there, especially if we're assuming Cedric Tillman's going to make the roster. And I think that's a safe assumption. And again, this is before anybody gets hurt. If you're going to put Jamari Thrash on, then you kind of have to decide between Michael Woods and David Bell and, you know, you brought back James Prochet, Jalen Darden. Receiver is always a spot where somebody emerges as an undrafted guy, right? There's always some undrafted guy in training camp, you know, in mini camp who shines and maybe could be a valuable special teamer. So I think that's a really, I think David Bell is going to have to fight for his roster spot. It wouldn't shock me if he made the 53, but I think he's at a point where it's like, there's some dudes in there that he's going to have to fight with that have some traits that he doesn't have.
Dan, you've been trying to cut poor David Bell.
I know. I feel bad. And he's such a nice guy. I feel bad that I'm like attacking David all the time.
I still think when you have a third round pick, that's going to trump a sixth round pick. So I don't think they're going to be ready to give up on David Bell yet. That's my story for now, and I'm sticking with it. Maybe things will change as we go along. Maybe they have too many of the same kind of guy, or maybe he's a choice route guy. And if he's a choice route guy, then he's going to be around. So we have to remember, there's a new vibe, a new philosophy on offense this year. They're letting Ken Dorsey help put his stamp on this offense. He's having a huge influence on it. So I think we have to be thinking of who is going to fit the Ken Dorsey way of doing things. And we don't really know for sure yet, but there's a chance that David Bell could be one of those guys that fits it perfectly. I'm not ready to cut David Bell yet. I'm just not ready, just because I don't think they're going to be ready to cut David Bell yet, because he was such a high pick and they raved and raved and raved and raved about him. And I don't know. I just don't know if that's going to happen yet.
And let's be fair. I mean, Michael Woods is a guy who's coming off an Achilles and hasn't played much in 2 years and was suspended too for the last six games of the season. So, you know, putting him on isn't some guarantee either. Mm-hmm. And he was a sixth round pick as well. So like you said, there's that sixth round pick versus that third round pick.
Right.
I just think from a skill set standpoint, he might have more to offer, but who knows? Maybe Ken Dorsey falls in love with David Bell. Maybe he thrives as a third down guy. I did think when they drafted him, like he just might catch a bunch of first down conversions, but it hasn't worked out for him yet. You guys are putting me on the spot. The anti David Bell guy here. That's all right. I can take it. I've been toughening up. I told you guys this. I've been toughening up by watching 80s action movies recently. Yes. So I can handle it.
I mean, we also joked last year. I did talk to David Bell at the end of training camp. And of course, like we got into the fact that there were some people speculating he might be cut even at this time last year. And I joked that when I asked him about it, I said, like, that guy right over there, and pointed at Dan. I did not throw you under the bus to David Bell, but yeah, you definitely planted your flag, so to speak, in this take, Dan. It's been a long time coming.
Wait, that sort of does sound like a little throwing Dan under the bus.
Well, I did not say Dan or point at him,
but I did give him a hard time and was like, yeah, I even threw in a little nod in your direction, but no, I did not point at Dan. It was just a joke.
There are times when we're sitting in the media room and Mary Kay will ask somebody a question about what people are saying about them. And it'll have been something I said on this podcast. Like, I might not be the only one saying it, but it'll be something like I might have said on this podcast. And I just expect her to be like looking at the person with her hand blocking me and like pointing in my direction.
I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to say, how do you feel about the fact that Dan has tried to cut you for the last 3 months on the pod and elsewhere?
I mean, is this true? Like, it's Dan, to your credit, the David Bell being potentially a casualty of the 53-man roster, that has been a thing that's been a semi. It's not just been your discourse. I've seen it multiple places since last year. It's a valid question mark, I think, for a lot of people. But Mary Kay and I do not fall on that side of things.
The only reason why I say that, not the only reason, but one of the reasons I say that is because of how much they loved him when they drafted him and how highly they speak of him even now, that he's always in the right place at the right time, that when he does get an opportunity, he usually catches the ball and does something with it. He doesn't get very many opportunities, but maybe that will change in this new vibe philosophy. I don't know. We'll have to see, but it is very interesting. It's an interesting position.
All right, we're going to wrap this pod up because I've got to put this post up and then I got to go watch Over the Top. I stay up later than everybody in my house. So it's like sometimes the algorithm just kind of gets me. So Get subscribed to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Become a Football Insider subscriber, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. Find us on Instagram, search Orange and Brown Talk. Find us on YouTube, Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.